You're storing memories to lose them again. You'll forget everything when this whole thing ends. You can't even predict what tomorrow brings, but don't lose track of living in the present.
Welcome to the Memory Distillery, everybody. I'm Anthony Veneri.
And I'm John Deck. Now, each week, we will malt, mash, ferment, and distill our way through the spirits of our past in the form of long-loved movies.
And this week on the Memory Distillery, they're coming to get you, Barbara. That's right. We are watching Night of the Living Dead from 1968, directed by George A. Romero. You guys voted on our latest poll, and the winner, the very clear winner, was Old School Horror, and so we decided to go fairly old school with this one. John, this is one of my favorite movies by, like, one of my favorite filmmakers ever.
I agree that it is one of your favorite movies by one of your favorite directors.
Good, I'm glad.
That's all I got to say about it. Oh, next!
Excellent.
Next
all right,
podcast.
Then we're just going to go, watch this, and then maybe we'll do the second half of the show. No, John, jump in here.
Yeah, it's interesting. I, for reasons I don't quite understand, absolutely love zombie movies. They're like an exception to the rule in terms of content that I typically enjoy. I don't really care about gore usually. I don't care about a lot of these things. And I think it all comes back to that idea of like, what would I do in a zombie apocalypse? You know, that whole, how would I deal with it? The strategy, the thrill of it. How would I be smarter than all these other idiots who, you know, don't seem to be able to put two and two together? And so to go back to what is really the grandfather of all of them, I almost feel like it's a position of honor rather than just like my favorite movie in the genre. So, I mean, I'm eager to go back. I haven't watched this for ever. And so I feel like it's going to feel pretty new to me in terms of just following it through, especially because since the last time I've seen it, I've probably seen 25 other zombie movies. So
sure.
To go back and just imagine and look at, you know, the progenitor of so much of that is going to be pretty exciting. But yeah, my memories are vague. I remember scenes and glimpses and pieces, but I probably watched this on a Sunday afternoon, you know, innocent enough, you know, movie that slipped through the cracks somewhere when I was maybe a youngster who is not yet in his teens.
Sure. I'm a fair bit the opposite, at least in terms of frequency of viewing. I watch this at least once every couple of years. My dad first showed this to me when I was probably like, I don't know, 7 or 8. And like we had it. I want to say we had it like dubbed on VHS or something like that. And then he bought the DVD when DVDs became popular. And then, you know, I have, this is almost embarrassing to say, I have a couple of different copies of this on DVD in various, various cuts of it. And much of George Romero's, sort of film catalog, I'm very much into the, not just the zombie genre, but, you know, old school horror. And yeah. George Romero is, you know, by and large, at least from a modern sense, the king of horror in terms of film, filmmaking. But there's so much to this movie that I love, just from like the way that it's shot to like certain scenes. Like there's a scene and I don't know if you remember this from previous viewings, but Barbara's roaming through the farmhouse and suddenly ends up in the trophy room, and it's like the real quick cuts to all the different like mounted heads, and every time that scene makes me jump, like still to this day. So there's all of that,
and it's been copied so many times too, variations of that exact scene.
Oh, absolutely.
Like even not even zombie movies, but like even in popular TV, you know, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you know, yeah. Like there's just these different moments that call back to that, where you're like, some part of you, like, or me, some part of me wonders, Is this consciously, are they paying tribute? Or has this just become such a part of what they admire and love in movies that they just can't help but to include moments and scenes that pull from, you know, these things, even if it's unconsciously?
See, in my head, I want to say it's like it's a conscious thing and it's an homage, but it's probably at least somewhat a mixture of both. Let me drink another one.
Words are funny.
Words are funny and hard. No, I think that on some level it's probably both, like, oh, you know, this is a neat trope and whatever, but also like, oh, you know, like let's kind of give a little nudge, a little nod to sort of the guy who started it all. So yeah, I mean, this is a movie that's inspired, like you mentioned, that scene, but so much of this movie has inspired so many other sort of pieces of pop culture ever since 1968. Like, there are so many movies that take bits and pieces from it and really like to kind of, in no uncertain terms, call out, oh yeah, this is a bit from Night of the Living Dead, or this is a shout out, or, you know, a hat tip to George Romero and Night of the Living Dead.
Well, and I say the best thing we can do is kind of jump into it, and later we'll be able to discuss some of these callbacks and some of these allusions with a more present, knowledgeable reaction from yours truly, because I can't wait to reacquaint myself with this. And for myself, I know you probably, like you said, you own like 22 different copies of it. I thought for sure I had this, and I don't. So I might end up getting the Criterion Collection just because I love the Criterion Collection of anything. But I do also have a Starz subscription, I believe, because I have too many of these stupid subscriptions to everything, and it's on Starz now. So,
well, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because you don't actually need any of those things to watch this movie. So a fun fact about Night of the Living Dead, it was originally called Night of the Flesh Eaters. And due to a late title change to Night of the Living Dead, the copyright paperwork was submitted with the title Night of the Flesh Eaters. And as such, this movie is not copyrighted. So you can view Night of the Living Dead on pretty much any platform anywhere without worry of copyright infringement. In fact, if you go right now to YouTube, anybody listening, if you want to go and check that out, it's on YouTube right now in its entirety. You can go and watch it for free. And then when we come back, we're going to break this down and see what John thinks through semi-fresh eyes. You ready, John?
I am ready.
Cool. Let's do it. Welcome back, everybody. John, was this everything that you hoped for from previous viewings?
It was definitely a thing. I mean, I guess that's all the most that we can all hope for, is for things to be things.
That's right. And stuff.
It's all of those things and stuffs. So watching Night of the Living Dead, I was kind of putting myself into that appreciative state of trying to soak in the time period, and the fact that something like this had never quite really been done before. excuse me. It reminds me a little bit of when we watched The Blob.
Sure.
In terms of just feeling the history of it and the sense of what was going on there. I think the interesting thing about this was that it wasn't really a zombie movie in the sense that, like, nothing was ever referred to as a zombie, or even, I don't even think they even said undead, but they did, of course, mention things, you know, people recently dead coming back to life. So that's kind of, it's just technicalities. I just think it's interesting that in this movie that so many look back and say this was the first one, that it was really more about just, like, they thought it was just people who had kind of gone crazy and gone on a murdering spree. And then later they're like, and those murderers are now eating people too. And then they're like, and to make it even worse, the people who are dying are coming back to life. So it was just really interesting.
It was. And I mean, if you, if you're sort of keyed into the, I guess, Romero verse of zombie films, so Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, etc., it almost follows a timeline outside of a timeline. And I know that that sounds confusing, but stay with me for a second. So with Night of the Living Dead, obviously we get sort of the beginning of what this outbreak really is. And we're talking a matter of, this movie takes place in the matter of about 12 hours. Because it starts right around sundown, it ends right around sunup, or maybe a little after. And then Dawn of the Dead, which we will watch one day, faithful listener, don't worry about that, the original Dawn of the Dead from 1978. It takes place sort of after the initial outset of, you know, what's happening, and it follows the focal points of the story in terms of characters through the sort of months following the initial outbreak. And then Day of the Dead, you know, you've got very small bands of survivors and sort of scientists and things like that. So it follows a timeline, but it's, and we're talking spanning decades now, because Dawn of the Dead, or sorry, Night of the Living Dead is 1968, Dawn of the Dead is 78, Day of the Dead is 85. So you've got a really big span there, and they all sort of seem to take place within the period that they're filmed in, or that they're released in. So
it's like Boyhood for the Undead.
Sure, I'd go with that.
Do they just follow one zombie as it like gets older? And
Boyhood. Okay, no, not at all. That's exactly the opposite, actually. Unless Bub happens to be in all three movies, which I don't think he is. Anyhow, sorry, I forgot where I was going.
Were you going to talk about the movie Night of the Living Dead?
I was thinking about it.
Let's circle back to that, because watching, I mean, we'll get to the other stuff soon enough, but watching this movie and wanting to just kind of bask in the quote unquote horror element, like, I again kept going back to imagining what would it be like to watch a movie like this when nothing quite like this had ever been around before. And like that, I think we right now are too desensitized to the zombie genre to, you know, like if right now, today on CNN or some news station, they start talking about hundreds or thousands of people who are like eating each other and like killing each other somewhere in, you know, Kansas, I'm going to think zombies.
Okay,
you know?
Hold on. Stop for a second, because Florida would be the answer there. But go ahead. Continue.
Well, no, if it was Florida, I'd just go, oh, I don't know, that's Florida. So
actually, that's a fair point. That's a very Florida thing to happen, and it has actually happened in Florida. So
right, that's all.
All right, we'll go with Kansas. We'll start with Kansas.
Kansas, why not? I mean, not that I have any great love for, but if it was just some generic place, stuff like that starts getting reported, I'm not going to go, oh, I wonder if maybe someone's just a little bit sick, or maybe just a whole bunch of people decided to go on a murder spree. I think zombies, because that's just this culture of zombies as an actual thing. You know, that supposition that this is like, we're just like 2 to 3 steps away from an actual zombie apocalypse, and there's books and TED Talks and all things about, you know, like it's such a part of what we imagine or think about, that even if you were not a fan of any of the movies or TV shows or books, like you've heard of it, you know, it's a part of the culture. But like then, I don't think that, you know, maybe it's like some deep, dark, you know, stuff and books and mentions and stuff, but it wasn't popular. And so you're watching this movie, and so your first thing is, what, is this guy drunk? You know, is this guy, are they trying to say, like, because he's, you know, just kind of rambling and stumbling, you know, towards them. And it's like, their first thought is not, oh, he's a tap. You know, it's like, it just, I can understand why it would be kind of slow going, slow moving, not really figuring out, you know, there's just so many elements to it that would be very, you know, unknown. And so maybe it was much more interesting to kind of pick apart and wonder what's going to happen and all this. But for myself, because of all the exposure and because of a number of different factors, I did find this movie a bit frustrating and slow at times in a way that wasn't enjoyable. And now everyone can burn me alive.
So let's expound upon that, because what did you find unenjoyable? Was it the pacing, or was it sort of the way that the story unfolded, or like what happened there that you didn't enjoy?
I guess it was wanting more something. If you're going to trap, you know, what, six people or something like that in a house, I want there to be more interaction than just that, you know, tension between one guy being a jerk and, you know, someone else telling him to shut up kind of a thing. You know, I think it'd be interesting to have more connection and between the people that are involved. It just felt like I was feeling claustrophobic, and I don't even have an issue with claustrophobia, but just that whole, they're stuck in there. I know that's part of the horror element of not knowing what's going on and what's out there, but like just I guess it all comes down to the pacing and all, because I was somewhat enthralled by the style of it and what was going on, and I was into it. And then once they're in the house for somewhere, I'd say about halfway through the movie, maybe about 45 minutes into the movie, I'm just kind of like, okay, what's now, what's next? Whereas compare that to say like with Alien, a movie where not a lot of stuff happened and you're just kind of, you know, waiting to see what's the next step. I felt like that there was this tension being dangled in front of me and everything was slowly building until it became a thing. And with here, I just didn't have that same reaction. It just felt a bit flat.
Well, and I can get that, because going back to Alien, you sort of get an expansion of a universe. You know, you start off with the layout of the ship, and then you get the pods, and then you get onto the other ship, and the world sort of grows from there. And with this, you start out in a big wide world with a brother and sister going to a cemetery, and there's this whole like town or this rural area, and things just sort of get closer and closer together until you're in this farmhouse, and then you have all the windows getting boarded up, and then you have escape into the cellar. So I totally get that claustrophobia element to it. Like everything just gets closer and closer and closer until you're alone in this dark, closed in space. So yeah, definitely. For me though, and while I understand the interaction element of it, the constant conflict, especially between Ben and Harry, but sort of with everyone, and the tension that lives sort of within everyone, and the unsurety, I could see that being the case in real life. Like if I were out somewhere and all of a sudden I'm being chased by this person whose only driving force is to kill me, and I end up in this farmhouse with complete strangers, there's bound to be that same sort of conflict and that fighting for who's going to be in charge and who's going to be, you know, the protector, and who's going to be the pragmatic one, and things like that. And we all sort of live inside of our own heads, obviously.
No.
And so we like, for that to sort of be portrayed on the screen in the way that it was in Night of the Living Dead, I think is very true to life.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you definitely, nothing seems too over the top, or, you know, like, oh, no one would act like that, because, you know, there's a reason there's this reoccurring theme within so many different zombie stories where you would think that the undead and all that is the real threat, but then it ends up being that, you know, humans are idiots and they can't, you know, everybody wants power plays and to be in charge and to like get ahead of each other. And so, you know, we would not know until something really actually happened, what the reality would be. But sadly, I don't have a hard time imagining, you know, people picking sides and, you know, putting, you know, shoving someone into a pile of zombies to get away, you know, that sort of thing. Like, I could see that becoming a reality, as sad as it sounds. Not that there wouldn't be also good things on the other side of the coin, but that's why a lot of my plans for surviving the zombie apocalypse don't revolve too much about being around other humans, which may be a big mistake, but you know what? Oh, well.
So I'm going to put myself out there for a moment because I feel like it's relevant. Back in the mid-aughts, the mid-2000s, there was a very popular platform or semi-popular platform on the internet called LiveJournal. And within LiveJournal was a sub-community of people who were zombie enthusiasts who wrote journalized fiction of a zombie apocalypse. And I was one of those people. And I have a roughly 200-page LiveJournal that is no longer published, but I have in PDF format that I basically I wrote a fiction about a zombie apocalypse, and a lot of it did revolve around like getting away from people and getting isolated and getting walls up and getting protected and things like that.
I think I say this a lot, but I mean, I absolutely would love to somehow, you know, just tear into you for this and give you a horrible time and make fun of you, but I can't, because I think that's perfectly respectable in the, you know, nerdiest way possible. But yeah, I've never quite gone that route, but I've written fiction that have those elements in it. And of course, I've spent time, you know, just daydreaming in general. Like if I'm, you know, out for a walk exploring a park or area, like I'm always counting and looking around in different areas, like where would my lines of escape be and stuff. And I almost feel at times like I have some sort of PTSD, and like I have like links to things that other people who've been in the military or talk about, like, you know, when they go out to eat and they want to keep their back to the corner so they could see everything going on around them, or people who are counting exits and looking for escape route. Like all these things I feel like I've always just done naturally because it just makes sense to me. It feels like being prepared just makes sense to be aware of your surroundings. But yeah, I always kind of couple that into okay, what would my immediate reaction be in this scenario if all of a sudden there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 10 dozen, whatever's going on, and I have to have a route, especially because at this point in my life, I'm not going to out-sprint anything that's very fast. That mobility, jumping across rooftops, these are all things that are way behind me. So it's more about being prepared and thinking it out and trying to, you know, go from there.
Yeah, definitely. I'm very much the same way, although mine is a bit more military bred. Like I don't like having my back to the door.
And military bread. Sounds delicious.
Yeah, until you've had military bread, and then, okay, well, no, it's I keep I don't like having my back to the door. I like to know where the exits are. I'd like to know what my options are, and that's all sort of part and parcel to, I think, you know, whether it be military service or sort of how you were brought up. Like that's a very common thing, probably not as common as it should be, but you know, that is what it is. Tell me what you did like about this movie.
And that's the end of the list. No, I'm just kidding. What was really interesting to me was trying to, because obviously making this black and white was a decision. Like, it wasn't the only option available.
Oh, right.
And so the lighting, like the things they did artificially to tone down lighting to make things as dark and claustrophobic as possible were very interesting. And I understand the choices, even when they were outside, and you could just see all the shadowing and all everything was like layered on the I would say filters, but at that time it was probably physical filters over the lens, or you know, they were doing something to really tighten the corners. Even when they're in the graveyard before anything bad was happening, it was already having that really dark tone to it. And of course the storm's mm-hmm. coming in, and whether, you know, it might've been a perfectly sunny day for all we know. But like, so the things they did atmospherically, in terms of how they shot it were, I could appreciate and were interesting. I didn't particularly love the musical score. It was okay, but it just felt a little generic to me. You asked for things I liked, and I'm listing things that are mediocre to not great. I don't know. I mean, I think my favorite thing about the entire movie as a whole was just what it started. Just, you know, where it led people imagination-wise, and even within the Romero zombie universe. Like, this, in some ways, almost felt more like a prequel. Like, that was done after the fact to go back and, like, tell, a story of something that happened in the beginning. There was just something about it that felt like it was just a chapter of a chapter book. And so, in and of itself, it was just kind of a thing that happened. But there weren't a lot of ups and there weren't a lot of downs. It kind of maintained at a certain level for a long time. And there were a few moments here and there where things escalated, but it wasn't like a crescendo leading up to any big revelations, or, you know, it was just a slow kind of creep. And then things just kind of got tighter and tighter and boxed in, and then it's over.
Well, and I think that maybe that could be a symptom of a couple of things. Like, I'm glad you brought up the sort of black and white choice, because I both own and have seen the colorized version of this, and it doesn't seem to hit quite as hard as the black and white version for whatever reason. I don't know if it's a time thing or what, but the point you just made about how there's not really a buildup, it's just like it's almost like a constant go, that I have a feeling that you have a young George Romero, who, this is one of his first films, and he doesn't know if he gets to tell his whole story, if he has a whole story to tell, or if this is just like a one-off and then he builds on it from later, or builds on it later. Yes, those words. but let's assume for a second that he has a plan for a much broader story that extends out beyond Night of the Living Dead. If I'm a young George Romero and this is the first film that I'm really making and you know, writing and directing, I want to get as much into it as I can and not necessarily tread so hard on a bigger buildup. Like, maybe I'm not spending a whole lot of time on Ben at the diner, and instead I'll just let Ben tell his story. Or maybe I'm not spending a whole lot of time on Harry and Helen and Karen getting their car flipped over and telling their story. I'm just, everything is happening, all the story is coming out at the farmhouse. Like, and I think that intensity is unique, and maybe not the best storytelling, but unique storytelling.
Yeah, like, for whatever reason, one of the things I thought of was, have you seen the movie 10 Cloverfield?
Oh, 10 Cloverfield Lane, yes.
Yeah, 10 Cloverfield Lane, that's right. If you ignore the end of that movie, but if you do that, you have this really good movie with just amazing acting and just very high suspense, and you don't really know quite what's going on. But essentially, without getting too much into the movie, you have a limited number of people who are more or less trapped indoors, and there's something going on, you know, that's making it so going outdoors is, you know, not okay. And then within that buildup, you have so many interesting tiny little things going on between all the different people, and things built to a crescendo, and you know, insane stuff ultimately happens. And it's like the feel of that and what goes on with that. It's like I almost wished that this movie had a little bit more of that kind of dynamic once they were, quote unquote, trapped in the house. Whereas instead, almost all the focus was shot after shot after shot of people walking up and looking out the cracks in the wood, you know, that they battered up the windows, and just looking out with us not seeing anything. And they look out and they go like, yeah, there's more now. And it's like I could see they were building things up and wanted to get that tension, you know, to never let go of it. But most, the vast majority of the dialogue and stuff just came at them just screaming at each other and saying the same thing back and forth over and over and over again. I'm going back in the cellar and y'all should too. I don't want to. I'm staying up here. Well, right. I'm going in the cellar. You should go in the cellar. I don't want to go in the cellar. You go in the cellar. Mm-hmm.
This is the Sunday school picnic.
Yeah. I don't know what that means.
Numerous times. I don't either, but maybe it meant something more in 1968.
Yeah. But it's just that this, I have a bit of a fascination in terms of storytelling and writing and stuff when you just throw people into weird, unusual situations. Not so much what is the weird, unusual situation, but how do people react when they're forced to contemplate something that they've never thought of before, never imagined they'd come to head-to-head with. It can get kind of stressful and a bit too heavy if it's like, you know, the death of a loved one or, you know, something that they could never imagine. Like, that stuff can be really, you know, fascinating and really well done, but it's just too much for me. But when it comes to the supernatural, or when it comes to, you know, the horror or apocalyptic kind of things, I think it's fascinating to not just look at what's the big bad thing that caused the problem, but what are people really like in these times? And I think just, you know, I had no solid expectation or feeling that this needed to go there. But I think that is one thing that it would have probably piqued my interest a lot more if there was a bit more interaction. We could say the same thing with The Blob when we watched it. And I'm not just saying all old movies are like this, because I know many old movies that are just juicy, delicious, you know, things with lots of layers that you can really dig into.
Sure.
But there's just something about this genre at this time. It was more about breaking ground and doing unusual things and just being out on the edge of what was acceptable and just being, you know, pushing boundaries and taking chances, and not about, you know, making interesting human characters necessarily.
And actually, I'm that last thing that you said is a really, really great point, making interesting human characters, because I think that one area that this film does lack in for sure is character development. Like, you don't get much of that, and that it is something that I've always craved watching this movie. So that's very likely sort of that big element that it's missing. Like, there's not really true character development in this. You get everyone as they are from the get-go.
And I mean,
no one changes and no one expounds upon themselves.
Yeah.
And Ben is always Ben. Harry is always Harry. Helen is always Helen. Tom is always Tom. Barbara is almost always Barbara until the very end when she suddenly wakes up, but it's too late. You don't really get a true, as you said earlier, crescendo of those sorts of things.
Yeah, like, I really didn't care too much one way or another about anyone living or dying. You know, and like, that's just not good for a movie with stakes like this. Like,
no, it's not.
It's okay if there's some people you feel a little neutral towards and they're expendable, and then they're the ones that get killed off, and you're still rooting for your favorites to make it. And it's even okay if someone you really like, you know, makes a sacrifice or, you know, gets killed unnecessarily, and you go, oh, what a tragic waste, and you have a reaction. Like, here at the end, like, without even truly remembering it, and I can't really say, maybe my subconscious remembered the ending and I just didn't recall, but as like the police and people are sweeping through the fields, I'm like, oh, he's gonna come up and they're just gonna shoot him whether they think he's a zombie or not, you know, or you know, that's how this is gonna end. And it's like, I can't pretend like, oh, I figured it out, because of course I've seen this before a long time ago. But it still has that, I wasn't like, oh, no, this would be so bad if it, oh, this is horrible, what a tragic, it's like, no, he's gone, whatever. I was not invested in anyone, not the little kid, not the parents, not any, you know, I just didn't care. Like, they were all just, special effect, you know, meat bags, as far as I was concerned. There was no connection. And I think maybe, like, as I'm kind of hinting at and getting around to, and the point is, maybe that's why the pacing got to me. Maybe that's why I wasn't so invested, is I just never really felt anything for the characters. I never felt connected on, like, any way. Even with the Blob, I felt a little more connected. I feel like they gave good old Stevie Boy a chance to expand a bit, and, you know, just to have a bit of, he's the character and he's kind of the good guy and trying to help get things done, and you're following him in that light. Whereas here, you just had a mashup of people thrown in a house and nothing really developed.
I can kind of see that. And I think that maybe the characters who probably break most away from that are Tom and Judy. And you sort of feel bad when they get blown up in the truck. But other than that, and sorry, that not even to a great extent. Other than that, you don't really get a whole lot more in terms of, like, personability or, you know, love of a character or anything like that.
Yeah, with that, I just go, oh, these are two people who don't understand how fire works. Oh, well. Oh, our truck's on fire. It'll be fine. Let's just keep going.
The improvement, probably the best improvement, at least in terms of Night of the Living Dead itself, probably comes in the 1990 version, when Tom Savini is directing and sort of making that movie. And, you know, you get one character who actually survives, and you get a little bit more development. And we could probably watch that at some point, maybe next October, maybe even the October after. We'll see.
I'm busy.
Oh, well then. the point being, yes, one area that this movie is definitely lacking in is character development. So, on the whole, John Deck.
That's me.
What is your opinion of this movie? Do you like this movie? Do you not like this movie? Are you meh toward this movie? Like, what's your big reveal here?
I guess it probably would not come as a shock, considering all the words I've already thrown in this direction. Not a huge fan. I can appreciate it. I can look at it and even study it a bit and try to imagine a time when stuff like this just didn't happen and there weren't stories. I even like some of the, you asked what I liked about it before, and I forgot, I didn't mention, but I did like how they hinted at some of the origin stuff, talking about, you know, why are there NASA scientists there? Like, why is that a part of this? It should just be the military. And there's radiation. Oh, and they think it's a satellite. And like, so even stuff like that, I like what they're hinting at and what they're trying to explain. But on the whole, the lack of character development and the lack of anything plot-wise really going on, and it all being kind of stuck in the house. Like, I'm glad I watched it. I'm glad I'm processing it. And I think it can fit into a larger picture. But if all we're talking about is just this movie in and of itself, no sequels, no further expansions in the entire, you know, area of cinema that, like, builds off of things like this. Yeah, I wasn't really too impressed.
Okay, that's fair. And I think you make some really valid points there. I think that if I took this movie by itself as its own thing, I would probably feel the same way. I don't know that I have the ability to do so, just because I'm so bought into the greater story that sort of builds from this, and and, you know, the universe that George Romero built around the zombie movie, and really what it's kind of given to the horror genre.
For you, it's like a total package for you. Everything's all wrapped in and are wrapped in. Like, I imagine from what you're saying, like, it's hard for you to just separate this as something totally on its own, because it's so connected to everything else for you.
Right. And if I were to do that, I would probably feel much the same that you did. I don't necessarily love the storyline as it appears within the hour and a half of this movie. I don't necessarily love the character development, but I love the world that it built and the world that George Romero and John Russo built. And, you know, obviously John Russo, he went on to do sort of his own thing after this, and he created his own sort of sequel universe. Those of you who maybe don't know, John Russo created Return of the Living Dead. He sort of owns the Living Dead name, whereas George Romero kind of went on to just The Dead. But he, the two of them, they crafted this universe together, and I happen to subscribe more to the George Romero side of it. And as far as Night of the Living Dead is concerned, I love it for what it stands for and for what it created. And I think that that's probably more important than the movie itself. So all of that to say, this movie is good or okay. It's not a cinematic masterpiece, but it holds a special place in my heart.
Yeah, I think what I'd like to do sometime soon, maybe that November month between Halloween and Christmas time, I think it'd be cool to even maybe go back and maybe watch something that I consider to be a masterpiece that's like a much older movie, only because I feel like I'm kind of sick of pointing towards some of these older movies and being like, yeah, they had no dialogue, yeah, they had no characters, yeah, nothing was good, because I'm starting to like feel like I'm wrapping in on myself and just, you know, being all like, yeah, it's only good if it came out after 2005. That's when The Rock had good movies with great dialogue. And but like, but I really do absolutely love several very, very, you know, older movies. Like, I just love so many going on there. So I just feel that there have been a couple we've talked about that have just been like, this is kind of bland and not a lot's happening. So who knows? Maybe we'll explore that soon.
Yeah, I would totally be down for that. We can talk off air about what movies we want to do in November.
Yeah, no need to talk about it with all these other schmoes listening in.
No, they don't need to hear any of that. All right. I think that we've squeezed this tube of toothpaste as far as we can. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I originally had played with the idea of a final question, but the more I think about it, if we were to discuss it on air, then people would know all about my plans for the zombie apocalypse. And I don't know if I want to share that with everybody, because I don't want anybody, you know, chomping on what I've got ready. I want it to just remain my own unique thing, so only the people I choose will survive with me.
No, yeah, you keep that close to the vest.
Yeah,
That's survivalism 101.
Yeah, that's not a quote-unquote comedy nugget to throw out there. This is life. So
for sure. All right, then I think that maybe we just forego our final question this week and we say that's our movie, everyone, and that's our episode,
and that's the real horror.
That is the real horror. I want to thank you all so much for listening to the Memory Distillery each and every week. We have new episodes every Monday. I want to ask all of you to, if you're enjoying the Memory Distillery and if you like what we do, more than likely you have some like-minded friends who are also into the movies that we all grew up on watching and sort of building our cultural lexicons from. I've said that word twice this episode. Tell that friend. Tell a friend. Tell whoever you think might enjoy the Memory Distillery to listen in and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts and Stitcher and iHeartRadio and all those other, you know, podcast platforms. And check us out every Monday as we distill another favorite from our past.
Yeah, and keep in mind, if you're a representative from Disney listening to us and you think those guys probably won't sell out, you're totally wrong. We'll sell out in a second. but we will not stop telling you that the music in our podcast comes from the song Destroying the Evidence by Semaphore. Just check them out. Do it. Do the homework. Make it happen.
Do it. They are a very cool band, and their whole lineup is actually really good. So go check them out.
And you guys should totally keep looking at our Facebook page. We'll have our final votes going on in this coming week to wrap up our Halloween horror month, and then very soon we're going to be getting into something similar where we do a lot of polls and get your guys' input on what we should do for Christmas. So keep an eye on that and write us at thememorydistillery@gmail.com if you have additional wants or needs or hopes or aspirations. Share with us. We would love it.
Tell us your dreams.
But yeah, aside from writing us about your dreams that we won't read and we'll just throw out, if you have interesting things to say, Anthony might read it. I'm just kidding. But we really do love that interaction. It's why we do our tasting room episodes, and we just love hearing from you. So stay in contact with us. We'll build some more things for you to enjoy. And thanks again for listening. I'm John Deck.
And I'm Anthony Vernieri, and this has been The Memory Distillery. And stay classy, San Diego.
You keep saying that, but I don't know what that means.
We haven't done it in a while, so I had to.
Huh. Is that like a reference to zombies?
Nope.
All right.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.